You are listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio, just having a conversation about one of our top news stories. We were talking earlier about Munich. Tonight, we're also talking about the efforts by Alderman Ed Burke to pass an ordinance that would make attacking a police officer similar to a hate crime and penalize those offenders more harshly than they currently are. Mike wanted to join the conversation. Hey, Mike, how are you doing?
Hey, how you doing, Patty?
Very well.
I appreciate you having these conversations on a regular basis, because sometimes you don't get it, especially at length. But Mike, the reason why I called is I was frustrated because some of the calls that you had almost pretty much are the reason why some of the tensions exist, I believe, because it's as if we see the world completely different depending on the neighborhood in which you live.
Right.
Even last year, he basically had said something earlier. And that was the real reason why I called, where he said the 9-year-old boy who had got shot and how he didn't see enough, protest or outrage on that.
And
I was
partly he also said even from the media. Oh, yes. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead. You go.
And I was like, well, man, based on my circle of my family, my black friends, family, neighbors and coworkers, there was plenty of outrage. There were vigils. There were posts on Facebook. There were, calls, in the community in which I lived, and I saw it all the time. And someone else would be saying, and I'm not picking on Mr. Shearer, but just in general, because that was the tone. Like, hey, how come they're mad at the police, but not at the loss of the life of this young man or others that have died? And I'm like, you see it all the time. You see, I see it all the time, and for those to act as if we don't care or we only care when police officers are involved in the shooting, I feel that's not, not only is it just wrong, it's also dangerous, I believe.
Well, I didn't mean to imply that the community didn't care, because I didn't get that sense, and I also did admit that, look, where I grew up versus where these certain communities are located, I have no idea what it's like. I don't. I mean, it's completely foreign to me. But again, from where I'm sitting, and I do deal with it on a daily basis up here in the newsroom, I just didn't see the intensity that you normally see when it's, cop versus community sort of situation. I didn't get quite the emotion from the community that I thought was warranted in that particular instance. But again, I will admit, I'm not there. I'm not on the ground. I'm not in community meetings. I'm not at the churches. So I'm sure that there was outrage.
Right. And the addition of what also makes it more frustrating is because, that 9-year-old boy was probably the only, that was one of the few times where no one really questioned the victim in that sense. The young man or the guy down in Florida who had got shot in the leg, even though he was laying on his back with his hand in the air.
Yeah.
You would think he's like the perfect victim. Like, there's no doubt on, like, hey, what's going on here? How can a person get shot when he's laying on his back with his hands in the air?
Yeah.
But you'll hear on, maybe not necessarily on this station, but definitely up and down the dial, why didn't he do X, Y, or Z? I was down in, I just moved back here from Chicago, from South Carolina. And the young man that had got shot in the back 5 times when he was running away from the police. And one of the main refrains was like, why did he run? As opposed to, why did the police shoot him?
Right.
And that's the kind of frustration that I'm feeling when I'm listening to some of the response from.
Well, and the way I had taken Rob's comments as well, if I might, I thought that also meant, why didn't the rest of the city protest? I mean, if it's not going to be for the loss of a 9-year-old boy who is innocent in every way, and the rest of the city didn't circle the wagons for a community that is our very own, a neighbor of ours, for a boy, what would it take? And it didn't happen. And that's kind of what I thought Rob was coming from as well, and including the media. You know, we tried for a week, and there comes a point, I think, that that what else can we do if it's just falling on hollow sentiment?
I'm also curious, Mike, if I can ask, is maybe sure. the reason why the community doesn't kind of march as a group when there's violence within the community is fear, is because you're not sure who in the community may have done something. And obviously it doesn't unite you in the same way as if you're marching against the government, someone in the government, someone in the police office, wherever right. it is. If they do something against the community, that obviously unites the community as a whole, because you're not, it's not the same thing. Is there a reason why maybe it's easier, or we see it more often that they're marching when they're protesting something outside of the community than something within it?
Sure. You know what I mean? I can throw two stats at you that I heard, you know, just recently. And one was on DNA Info, where it said there were 478 murders last year in 2015, and only 128 of those cases are cold. So a 75% close rate on murders, and most of those are focused on certain neighborhoods on the west and south side. So in other words, we know which, you know, those who committed murders are on the street. Even the superintendent of the police department said that there are about 1,300, you know, known killers or not called killers, but those who are involved in gun violence that they fully suspect, but they can't go because they don't have enough evidence to arrest them. So those guys who commit the crimes are roaming the streets. So if I can't necessarily protest the guy who might be three blocks down, who I know is a killer,
right?
It's a lot easier to, you know, like you had said, it's a lot easier to protest Rahm Emanuel or McCarthy or Alvarez as opposed to, you know, the guy who I know can, you know, enforce street justice.
Oh, yes,
Mike, you're a black man. Bring me to where you are right now. Share with me some of the frustration and where you as a black man and where the community would like to be.
What do you mean the frustration as far as the government?
Just the anxiety in terms of kind of like a day-to-day dealing with this sort of thing, because again, I don't understand it.
Mike's saying that's a lot of pressure for one guy to take that up.
No, that's
right,
no, Mike? I'm trying because he's, but you know what? Because Mike clearly cares, and he called in and he wanted to share. And I think this is great conversation. But I was just wondering, you know, what's the anxiety you carry around with you?
The anxiety is for my son. I don't want to get too emotional over here, but it's, you know, I know things are better for me than they were for my father, but I don't know. There's certain things. My son, he's 7 years old, and I'm like, man, there's certain things I have to teach him that his classmates don't have, may not have to learn. That I know his white peers won't have to worry or concern themselves with. Not only do I have to make sure that he is at least prepared to, has a current, have a decent enough level of education to compete, but he has to be able to make sure that he watches his mouth, even because if he's in the wrong place at the wrong time and it says the wrong thing to the wrong officer, he could get shot. That's the kind of frustration that I live with.
Yeah. Mike, you know what, man? Thank you. That's courageous, and that's exactly what I was looking for. I appreciate it.
And it's powerful. I think that's what anybody can understand, is that we don't want to be in the wrong place. We all want to be in the right place together. And you have done a lot, I think, and I hope for our listeners who have heard in your voice the urgency with which you want people to understand.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. You have a good night, and I look forward to talking to you again. Please join us, all right? Give your son a hug for me. Thank you, Mike. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. And I know it's Friday night and we're having a kind of a heavy conversation, but it's important. And we have listeners who are calling in with their stories. This has been a really tough time. The last several years, I think that we have seen racial instability. I think there's a lot of racial tension. And there was a poll that said that people feel like it's worse now than it has been in decades. And I think people are surprised. Well, we have a black president. We have so much access to so many different things. And yet it seems as though we are getting farther and farther apart. And people are crying for just their own existence, I think, in communities. And that includes the police department and for, not crying, but I mean pleading with people to understand what it means to be a police officer, what it means to be a black man in a community that is already disadvantaged. And Johnny wanted to join the conversation. Hey, Johnny, how are you doing?
Pretty good. What? I listen to you guys every night.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, about that. I'm a convicted felon. did 11 years of state, was a formal gang member. Do I know about run-ins with police? Yes, I do. A lot of them. Mm-hmm. Have I got assaulted by some? Yes, I do. But you know what? Well, one thing my mother always taught me is that you put yourself in that situation. You walked into that situation. You wouldn't have been on that corner. You wouldn't have got your butt whooped like that. You wouldn't have did this. You wouldn't have did that. Because at the end of the night, somebody breaks in your house at 3 in the morning, who are you going to call? 911.
Right.
I mean, everybody's hating the cops. But you look at all these videos, cops are giving
yes.
giving you an opportunity. Right. It's a split decision for them. They're already coming in, and they don't know. They're saying, oh, cops handle stuff different on the south side of Chicago than what they do in the burbs. Of course they do.
It's
Why?
A more dangerous.
Because gangs are heavier on the south side of Chicago.
So would you say that a police officer who reacts differently when they pulled over, and if it's a white police officer or a black police officer, I don't think that this is strictly a white police officer situation. If a police officer pulls over somebody who is black, do you think that they, even if it's just for a vehicle violation, do you think that they treat black people differently?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I think you got some that probably do, probably don't, but they're doing their job, man. At the end of the day, they're doing their job. It's stressful as it is. They don't know if they're coming home that night or not. You know, they're forced to make a split decision. You know, yes, they're police officers. Yes, they work for the citizens and everything. But at the same time, they're the ones, when guns start shooting off, they're the ones running towards the gun shooting.
That's
true.
They're
not running away from the gun and shooting.
That's absolutely the truth.
You know, mm-hmm. And all these people could say what they want to say, but they never lived that life.
Well, thank
you. Know what I'm saying?
Yeah, Johnny, and I appreciate your perspective. We haven't had that perspective yet. And thank you for listening every night. Call us more often. We'd always love to hear from you.
Definitely.
All
guys,
right.
Have a great night.
You too. Thank you, Johnny. Wow, the phone lines are lighting up. We have Carl, who's been on hold for a few minutes. Carl, what did you want to say about this conversation?
Well, I'm a 59-year-old black male raised in Chicago all my life. I live on the south side, raised in Morgan Park, went to Archdiocese Catholic School. Personally, I've never had problems with police. I didn't got pulled over as a young man, as a middle-aged man. And if you're respectful, they're good. I don't understand sometimes the type of police these people are running into. Especially when they said, like, the guy, I saw it on the internet, he had his hands up. I don't understand that situation.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, people can be knee-jerky. You know, that's what happened, My Lai in Vietnam. You know, those soldiers who went into that village, they were knee-jerky. You know, and that happens. I can understand. I got a cousin who was a cop, retired. His two kids, his two boys are policemen. And I work at a Southside Social Service Agency that serves substance abusers and people with a history of mental illness, and they're all low income. This is Roseland, so they're all low income, and you know they have a slanted view of the police, but they don't understand. You know, it's difficult to be a cop.
It is.
And like my mom used to tell me, like the gentleman just said, you know, if you know where you hang out at, if it's a bad place, you got to have enough common sense just to leave that area. You can't expect to hang out in an area that's known for trouble and not expect the trouble to one day affect you. We got to use our common sense. I'll be honest, I'm somewhat disappointed in my own race, and I will be honest there, because it doesn't seem like the young people are thinking. You know, many times when I talk to the young people in Roseland, the young males, I'm talking maybe 15 through 27, they have an attitude as if, you know, don't ask me nothing. If you're a cop, don't ask me nothing. They don't understand that sometimes you got to be 50-50 when you're out there in public dealing with officials. You can't have that attitude, leave me alone, I don't want to answer nothing. That's not going to get you nowhere. I personally feel like we're going to lose a generation before we can save the generations coming up after that. Like the kid, real quick, and I won't hold you long. But
you're fine, Carl.
That was executed, the child that was executed in the alley. Show you the mentality. The father refused to cooperate with the cops. They shot his son. He's not going to cooperate. That shows you the mentality. Something wrong with a person like that. The mother uses the money in the GoToMeFund, or whatever the name of it is, as fundraising website to help people. And they were trying to help her bury her child. She uses some of the money to buy a car because she's afraid she receives threats. I mean, where was her mind at? Her son just got executed. And his refusal, the dad's refusal to work with the police, just says something, you know, so outstanding. And real quickly, the way the situation ended up was still crazy, because he ended up shooting the girlfriend of the guy who shot his son, and he got arrested that same day that they had captured the guy who shot his son.
Right.
The father was captured shooting the girlfriend of the guy who shot his son. It's like, it doesn't stop. And these demonstrations done by Father Flager and Black Lives Matter, which I respect, they're never reaching the audience they need to reach.
That was my concern, is that, you know, the community is already in protest, in a state of emergency. It has to come from everybody. The whole city of Chicago has to go say, there's something wrong here. What can we do?
It comes from the household, my opinion, comes from the household. I work with some of these young mothers who are in their 40s and their kids will be 20. And honestly, once these kids get 15, 16, these single mothers, and this is my opinion, and I'm going to just flat out say it, these single mothers living in subsidized housing, getting a link card, cannot control these boys. They can't control them. The boys run the house. I got evidence of that just when they come to my groups and they tell me what's going on at home with their kids. They can't control these boys, 15, 16, 17, and 18, because they haven't been role models. Like I said, we're going to lose a generation before we can save the rest of the generation.
Here, Carl, Rob had something to say.
No, I was just going to say, well, Carl, I mean, good point. I mean, there's your socioeconomic component to the larger problem in these communities. Let's take the woman in Baltimore, for instance, as the protests were going on after Freddie Gray had been killed while in police custody. Everybody applauded this woman. I think she's a single mother of, I want to say, 5 or 6. And we all saw the YouTube video. It went viral. She went down to the protest. She saw her son on TV. She hogties him, you know, basically slapping him up beside the head, saying, what are you doing down here? Why are you acting this way? And good for her. I mean, I did. I thought that was needed. But here's the problem. And to your point, Carl, here's the problem. She was a single mother of 6. Now, I will say that she probably is doing the absolute best that she can to raise her family. But again, single mother of 6, that's a problem.
Sir, I see that all the time.
I know you do.
Mothers,
I know.
Carl.
6 kids, 4 different fathers. We have to start, and I'm talking about the Black community, you have to catch these people in 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade with parenting classes. And you have to talk to them about the woes of having these multiple children, and you have to talk to the boys about making these babies. I figure, my personal opinion, because I'm seeing things I don't like as a Black man. You know, I'm almost leaning towards Trump only because I'm hearing title reforms, entitlement reforms. I'm getting to the point where if it takes entitlement reforms to get these people to not, and I'm referring to my people, because I hear them say this all, I do hear this. As recent as today when I was at work, you know, I hear things like, you know, they're happy where they're at on a 30% income subsidy, where they pay 30% of their income for rent. They have a link card, and they got a reduced CTA CTA card. And they're happy. They're content. That's it. And I'm like, no, you need more power life than that. Go ahead, ma'am.
No, you struck on something there as far as entitlement reform, and if people are wondering about that, that's legislative efforts to make changes in the benefits paid from government-administered funds to citizens who meet a certain requirement and are entitled by either right or legislation to receive that benefit. And I think, Carl, you struck on something that is important for, you know, people will put us into two different camps, that Democrats just are about welfare, they want to spend more money. The problem is it being done efficiently, and is it being done accurately? Is it accomplishing what the intention is? And I think what we're hearing from you, Carl, is that not only is it not accomplishing that, but it's also exacerbating a situation that is culturally entrenched and is not getting any better.
Yeah, and it's not, you know, when I was growing, I was born in 57. So when I'm growing up in 67, 68, 69, 71, it was a shame to be on welfare. They called it welfare back then. It was a shame. My mother was born 1912. My father, 1921. Everybody worked. Mm-hmm. Everybody worked. But what's happening now, I'm finding people who, how can I put this, if they have a substance, mental illness, that's a different story. But if you have a substance abuse history, 10 years, 15 years, that kept you out the workforce, now it's real difficult for you to get a job. I'm finding these people are being steered towards SSDI, you know,
right.
disability.
Right.
And I'm like, no, you can work. You don't need to get on disability and get used to $730 a month. You can get out there and get a job. A job does change some things, but what happens, what I'm seeing, is they've been out the mainstream so long, they do not know how to form a routine, getting up, dealing with everything you got to deal with to go to work. Your moods, other people's moods, parking, the weather, supervisors who you don't get along with. And this discourages them, and they fall back up under the radar.
Carl, you have seen a lot, and you are frustrated by so many things, and I think that our audience appreciates some insight into the sort of community that you live in, and to hear that you're frustrated as well and want the best for your neighbors, I think is important for us to hear. Carl, will you call us again and let us know how you're doing? And
yeah, definitely so.
All right.
I got the number, I'll lock it in.
All right, lock that in, Carl. We appreciate it. You have a wonderful Friday night, a great weekend.
Have a good evening.
You
just
too.
Take care, guys.
Thank you. We have one more call before we get to what's in the box. I think one more call from Lance, who wanted to address something that Johnny brought up earlier. Johnny was our caller who had said he had done some time in prison, was a gang member, and was saying that we don't know what it's like for police officers to be in that situation. What do you think, Lance?
Well, I want to address Carl and Johnny, because they both, Carl said something that he wasn't even aware of. And he said, as a young man, he was pulled over a lot by the cops.
Right.
Which is something that he said without even being aware that he said it.
Right.
And now that, and they both said that it's your surroundings, it's your association, which I agree with. But that's not always the case. Now, I grew up, never committed a crime in my life. Right now, I live a great life. But I can say that I was pulled over by the police department on more than one occasion, mistreated by the police on more than one occasion. One day I was coming home with a Bible in my coat with a suit on and what we call the old church shoes years ago. I was running home because I wanted to see the football game, the Bears, on Sunday. And I was pulled over by the police. I'm running now, a young man about 15, thrown against the police car, patted down, searched, talked to like I was an animal. And then one of the police thought I had a Bible in my coat. One of the police sort of got a little milder. But at the same time, they really didn't see any reason to treat me any differently. But the point I want to make is that people want to make these two camps. Either you have to be for the police and against the black community. I support the police 100%. I believe the police do an excellent job. I believe the police are needed. I truly believe that. To shoot a police officer, to me, is one of the lowest things you can do in your life. But at the same time, we don't want to be savaged by these people at the same time. We don't want to be mistreated. And I have been mistreated. I bought a new car, a high-end new car. I was pulled over 6 times in 1 week. You know, and just, no one can explain why. If you ask why, it gets worse.
Yeah, no, this is what it's hard to get across to people is they dismiss that as, oh, it's not happening as often as you think it does. If it's happening to Lance, it's happening to someone. And how is that not enough?
It happens to my son. And see, here's the thing. Certain communities don't understand when black men say that we're pulled over for no reason. Certain communities don't understand that because it doesn't happen to them. And I understand they don't understand that. And I don't expect them to understand that. But I don't expect it to be dismissed.
Yes, I agree.
I think that people need to really look into this matter. Why is the police rougher with us? Why do the guns come out quicker with us? Why are we, why are, when you see the police handling a black, let me say this here real quick.
Yes.
When you run from the police, when you're fighting back with the police, you're asking for trouble. I truly believe that. I truly believe that. But the gentleman on the ground the other day with his hands in the air, and he got shot, and then I heard the response that he was aiming for the autistic child. And by me having an autistic daughter, that really stuck with me.
Wait, is that
autistic.
Is that what they were actually aiming for, the young man with autism?
That's what he said. He was aiming for the autistic child because he wasn't following directions. And I have an autistic daughter. She's 12 years old. She can't follow directions. So I'm thinking to myself now, What if the police pull me over and my daughter's in the car and they tell my daughter to raise her hand and she don't understand what they're saying and they shoot my daughter?
Because she's not following directions. Right.
Right. They have to understand how they need to, bring the situation down instead of escalating the situation all the time.
And this,
they have the power.
Right.
They have the power, but sometimes power goes to our head. I have an uncle, and I remember when he first became a police officer. I can almost see the change in his personality because of the power that he received. And I understand that you have to have this power because you have to do this job and you have to have a strong mind to do this job. But at the same time, you have to remember that we still are people and we deserve respect. When a 26-year-old officer pulled me over and I'm a 53-year-old man and he's talked to me like I'm a child, I have a problem with that.
Lance,
there's no respect.
There's so much territory for us to cover, and I hope that you continue to join our conversation because you and I have something there, too. My son has autism, and I've wondered the same thing when he's an adult and doesn't respond to much less, not just respond, Lance, but doesn't speak. When I saw this story, I was mortified because Declan would not have he would go towards the police officers, and he would probably reach out to them to get their hand, whether the weapon was drawn or not. Because that's how he asks for help. Lance, I appreciate your conversation, and I think we need to have more of it going forward. We look forward to hearing from you again.
Thank you.
Thank you. More after this on 720 WGN.